Hello and welcome to the No Name Ever podcast. I'm James Bird, stepping in for Jamie Smith as he's been banished for bad tweets this week. We'll be talking about the magnificent point in the Chelsea game this weekend and also having a look ahead to Lincoln City in the FA Cup. And we'll also have the usual tweet of the week and prediction features. So moving on to the Chelsea game, it was a great point against the league leaders in a game that probably most of us thought would be quite difficult, even though obviously a few of us did predict wins last week. How did you think the game went, Natalie?
It was absolutely fantastic and I'm still absolutely buzzing from it. What a great game. What a great afternoon. I've got to say, I'm massively enjoying football this season. I know we've had a few difficult points, but on the whole, everything just seems to be massively falling into place. I'm not going to lie. I think 3 minutes in, when the first shot goes in and they suddenly break away from our defence, we get a little bit jittery. And then when we start going 1-0 behind with just 7 minutes gone, I was just looked at my dad and I was like, this is going to be really horrible, Dad. I don't want to see it. And I honestly really worried that we were going to get an absolute hiding. But I am very, very pleased to say that the boys absolutely focused, turned it around, executed their game plan absolutely perfectly. And what a fantastic performance. I was really, really pleased yesterday. It was a great game.
Obviously, it was quite an early goal for Chelsea. And I think at that point, a lot of people might have been thinking it was going to be a bad day at the office, a rare one at Turf Moor as well. Kevin, how did you sort of feel when the early goal went in?
Yeah, I think particularly after, because that was their second shot on target within the first kind of 5 or 6 minutes. And particularly when you look at the way that move progressed, they started with the ball back in there, back four almost, and they got the ball forward so quickly and almost so easily. Obviously, Robbie Brady flings himself to try and make the slide tackle, but ends up just flying across the turf, and they've got acres of space to burst forward into. And I remember that beautiful touch around Michael Keane. At that point, you look at that, how effortless that move forward seemed, and you did start to think, is this going to be the first time this season that we really look out of place at Turf Moor? We're going to be outclassed for the first time at Turf Moor. And all credit to the team. I think we reacted very well, very instantly. That goal in the sixth minute was their second shot, their final shot on target in the whole game. And I think that's testament to how well we recovered. And actually, I think we ended the first half and began the second half as the better team. Chelsea grew into the second half again and had a lot of possession, a lot of the ball, but never really threatened that second goal. And actually, I'd say on reflection, despite the visitors' domination of the ball, I thought we probably had the two better chances to go on and win the game in terms of chances and goal.
Yeah, you've touched there a little bit on what I was going to come to next, which is the build-up to the Chelsea goal, and I thought there's quite a lot of mistakes. Obviously, Robbie Brady went in quite rashly on Victor Moses, and it wasn't really the best start to his home debut because he really was to blame for the rest of the move progressing. Obviously, then there's the ball into Pedro. He does take a great touch, but I think maybe Keane just stands off him a little bit and doesn't get close enough. Adam, you know, if you were going to apportion blame to someone in the build-up to that goal, I mean, where do you think it lies?
I think there's got to be a collective responsibility. I know that's a cop-out, but you really knew that we were in trouble after Brady missed that slide tackle. I don't really know what he was doing. He was so far away when he slid in that there was always an element of risk that he wouldn't get it. I mean, I've seen lots of people blame Ward, and it was just, I think, a collective failure. like all of the defenders really sort of were so out of position because of the speed of the attack that you've got to blame everyone, really. You can't really pin it on one sole person.
I think in defence, though, I think, you know Brady's a long way away. That's probably perhaps a positioning problem before that, but once that move is going forward, I suppose he's got to try that slide tackle, or else I don't think there's much else he can do. And then when it gets into the box, that ball across, it does get a slight nick off the back of someone's heel, which gives it it's only a slight deflection, but I think it's a very meaningful deflection. Which takes it right into the path of Pedro, and that's a phenomenal touch. But I think 9 times out of 10, that deflection takes it away, and that goal doesn't happen. I think Pedro does so well to react so quickly. Michael Keane probably needs that extra quarter of a second to react. And I think that's the difference when you're playing against a team of Chelsea's quality. I think 9 times out of 10, if you're playing a team that doesn't have the quality of Chelsea, that deflection means that the attacker has to have that extra time to react. And the same time as Michael Keane, I think that cancels it out. And I'm thinking, yeah, nine times out of ten, Michael Keane is able to recover in time to stop that ball getting through. So, you know, I'm not going to say that it was a world-class defensive effort from us, because there were certainly some mistakes. I don't want to say mistakes. I think that's too negative a word. I think there were some things which which could have been better. But I think at the end of the day, I think that's quite harsh. And I think we were just caught out by a very, very good move and some phenomenal individual efforts as well.
Yeah, I think one thing on the goal is it was scarily quick how it happened. And the quality was so good of the Chelsea goal that you do start to worry. And it's something that I've noticed again and again this season. We sort of look like we're on the ropes, and then suddenly we sort of recover. Like there's maybe a 5 minute period after the goal where we're still a bit like shaken, but like we get resolute. And it's amazing. You think it's going to be 7-8, 8-0 or whatever, you know, as a fan, where you sort of picture the worst case scenario. Yeah, and then we sort of recover, and it's absolutely fine, and we're just as we were, and sort of on the front foot again. I think it's a real quality of the side not to be taken with the momentum of the game like some sides would be.
I think that's a really good point to make, actually, that, you know, we've shown there that we can fight back really well. And that's obviously the first time, I think, this season that we've been behind at home early on. And obviously, we've shown that not only can we perform well at home when we have the advantage to start with, but we can come from behind and get a great result. I'm going to be lazy for the next little bit and sort of quote from my own Twitter, but obviously there was a lot to talk about, I think, from the players today. And I thought it was Boyd's best game of the season, you know, by quite some way. There's a lot of work to do with the way that Chelsea set up. And in the same way, I thought that both Lawton and Ward were magnificent. And, you know, they had to play such a different game to how our fullbacks normally play. You know, the way that Chelsea come at you with this free at the back, sort of with the wing backs, and then obviously the way Hazard comes in, I think it made it quite difficult. And we saw that Lawton had to make a lot of headers today, which he doesn't normally do. But I just thought that the two of them particularly were magnificent, and obviously the tracking Boyd did was just great. I mean, what did you think, Natalie, about some of the individual performances?
Yeah, I mean, it's really difficult, isn't it, to pin anybody out for particularly special players, and likewise, it's quite harsh to look at somebody and give them criticism for poor individual performance. I think as a general point, I don't think playing the likes of Chelsea is a particularly... what's the word I'm looking for? I don't think it's an appropriate game to start judging some of our players and trying to assess where they are, because we're talking about playing world-class players here and a team who are going to be champions very shortly. So it's very hard to sort of say, oh, you know, well, Boyd should have done this, or Ward should have done that, and, you know, Barton was invisible here. None of those things happened in any event, but I'm using those as an example. But as a general point, I think it was quite interesting to see how tactically our team used their own skills and their own plus points to counteract a very, very tricky side. Saying that, I do agree with you, James. I thought Lawton had one of his best performances I've ever seen in the side. I like singling out for praise where somebody has done something better and has improved as the season's gone. Our regular listeners will know that I was quite vocal with my concern for Matt Lawton at the start of the season. I couldn't see in the early stages how effective he was going to be at this level, and I had some concerns about whether or not he was strong enough physically and mentally to be able to deal with some of the Premier League's toughest forward lines. I'm so pleased to see the improvements that he has made, and he's actually turning out to be quite a competent defender, and I really enjoyed watching him. And I think yesterday he had such a tough afternoon because he was constantly being pulled away from the wing and pulling closer and closer to the centre, to centre halves, and he caught with that really well. And obviously Dyche has done his homework, and Boyd and Brady both on those sides covered the back line really well, so we almost ended up with a back six where we just had this bank of the regular back four stayed very central and just counteracted and put a bank of defence there, and our two wingers just pulled back slightly and just covered that space that Chelsea were trying to create by pulling the fullbacks, you know, more central, and it worked really, really well. And I've been reading so much press today, and I think I'm sure most of our fans do this. When you've had a really good win and you're buzzing from it, you just want to absorb as much positive press as you can. And I honestly haven't seen any negative press today. It's been so complimentary about the way we played. And, you know, outsiders probably look at this result and wonder whether we parked the bus or whether we played very negatively just to try and play for a draw. We didn't do that. Dyche absolutely got his tactics right. He did his research and he came up with a game plan. And I've actually seen pundits and press and experts in the field come out and say that Burnley just showed the rest of the league how to counteract that Chelsea side, with one newspaper suggesting that if this game had been played earlier on in the season, some Chelsea might not have the points advantage that they do have because they will have been found out. Now, that might be a bit of a stretch, to be honest, and a bit, you know, excitable journalism. But it just goes to show the credit that Burnley's being given for what they've done.
Yeah, no, I thought we obviously played a fantastic game, and we really did nullify the threat from some very good players that Chelsea have. Just while we're still on the positive aspects of individual performances, I thought Joey Barton was fantastic in the middle of the park. I think he showed that this should be a question why he went to Scotland in the summer, because I think at the time a lot of us felt that maybe he went because he didn't feel he had Premier League football in him anymore. But, you know, he's come in and he's showed that that's definitely not the case. And, you know, when he can go up against, you know, the players that Chelsea have in the middle and play like that, it's just a fantastic performance. I thought him and Ashley West would work really well together. What did you think about, you know, the central midfield pairing, Kev, considering last week we thought it could be a potential problem?
A potential problem, yes. I think, you know, it worked really well. I raised the concern last week that we could potentially be heading into a key stage of the season, maybe playing four, five, six games with a different central midfield combination in each of them. And I think Sean Dyche would have preferred not to have had to play particularly Westwood from the start so early. I think maybe Brady, probably an eye of him coming into the side sooner rather than later. But that central midfield is an area similar to centre-back, where I think you get the most value when you've got that set unit. The same two players or the same three players, depending on formation in the system, are playing all the time. And that is the backbone of the team. They get the whole team. They set the whole pace of the team. They interact with pretty much everybody on the field more than anybody else, I think. So for me, I think it's really important to have that backbone of those central midfielders having a consistent combination there. And for Westwood coming from the start so soon into his Burnley career, without having the time to learn the games of the other players around him, could have been and probably was actually for me at the start of the game a slight concern. That said, I think he was very good. He put in a fantastic performance alongside Joey Barton, who was just phenomenal. He was, I think every week now he seems to be putting in a performance which makes us think, hang on, no, that's his best performance for us. No, that's his best performance for us. He was absolutely fantastic, and the more we see him, the more desperate I am for him to continue playing with us for the rest of the season and get as much full-butt football under his belt as possible. If he does get a lengthy suspension, I think that'll be a huge blow to us, because he has just been... he's just been phenomenal. I'm running out of way, kind of superlatives to describe his performance. And I thought he played very well with Westwood as well. You know, you've got to remember as well, these are two players who just a little over a month ago weren't at the club. So that's how much our central midfield has had to change and adapt. But it didn't show at all. I think both of them looked like they'd been playing with the team for much longer than they had. They looked like they'd obviously Joey Barton knows the system inside out after last season, but Westwood, he looked like a Sean Dyche player playing in a Sean Dyche team, which on the face of it is obvious, but I think Burnley play a very different style of football. It's not, I think the way we approach games, both off field and on the field, is probably different to a lot of clubs and a lot of teams. I think Westwood just he didn't look out of place in that team. He looked like he belonged in that team, which is testament to him and also testament to Sean Dyche for he's very good at, I think, identifying those players that will come into the system and maybe not. You know, I think Westwood's had a bit of criticism from Aston Villa players, and that's not the sort of thing that Sean Dyche is going to look at. I think Sean Dyche very much looks at, is he the right character and the right player to fit into our team? And, you know, I don't want to get too carried away after one game, but I think after that game, against a very testing opposition as well, you know, I mean, they've got some of the best central midfielders in the league. You've got Kante, who is just phenomenal. I think the way they both came in and performed so well just give me that bit of confidence that despite having some of our key central midfielders missing, that we're going to be all right. I certainly feel a lot more positive about the coming weeks than I did a couple of days ago.
Yeah, I thought that Westwood was really, really tidy. I mean, that's maybe the easiest way to describe his performance. And I know he was a bit of a Mormite player for Villa fans. They either loved him or hated him, but on early evidence, I'm very glad he's at the turf. While we're still very much on the positives, let's just talk about Robbie Brady's free kick. What a fantastic free kick. Total football pornography. I'm going to put you all on the spot here, actually, and I'm going to ask, when was the last time you saw a free kick of that quality scored by a Burnley player? We'll start with you, Adam.
Silence.
Yeah. Did Danny Fox score a free kick against West Ham in the first Premier League season?
Yeah, it was on his debut, wasn't it?
Yeah, that comes to mind. That was a very good free kick.
Extra points for also mimicking the debut goal phenomenon of Robbie Brady. Oh,
yeah.
There.
Yeah.
That is actually a top draw shout. I think I was someone who also scored a free kick on the debut. I'd completely forgotten about that.
Maybe, and also, wasn't Barton's free kick on his debut as well? So maybe we should just make sure whenever we sign a player, we put
them on a free kick.
On a free kick duty.
Dive.
How about you then, Natalie? What can you compare it to?
Yeah, this is a really tough one, really, on the spot. Thanks for this. What have we told you in previous podcasts, Birdie, about homework? I don't like doing things off the cuff. I think the only one that I can maybe think of was it Brentford last year in the promotion season? We were on a Sky Friday night game. Was it 4-1? And there was two spectacular goals. There was a Barton's and there was Arfield's. And I know one of them was a free kick and one of them was an open play. And I think Arfield's was an open play because I think I remember giving that one the slightly better goal because it was from open play. And I'm pretty sure that Barton's was the free kick and that was a screamer. So I think that's the only one that I can think of.
No, that was definitely a good one, yeah. Sorry, and you, Kev?
Yeah, both of the ones that we mentioned there are both spectacular in different ways. I think, if I remember right, was Danny Fox's from quite wide? I'm not sure. I think it might have been. And Barton's was, it wasn't as spectacular as Brady's, but it was gorgeous in a very different way.
Yeah.
It's almost like he just stood there. It's almost like he wasn't even, it just kind of, I don't think he had a run-up. He just kind of flicked his toes on it and it just went in. But it was one of those, goes where you just don't know how it happened. It was just
you're right.
Whereas Brady's, it was just pure. Yeah, it was just fantastic. It was the most one. It was, if you were to design the perfect free kick, that was it. It was, you know, a nice distance out. It had an incredible curve. It was until it got to like the six yard box. It was
so
still
good.
Wide of goal. I mean, it just. I think the only thing that's missing is that little chip off the crossbar, and it would have been. I'm going back to the Robbie Blake era, and you know he had a couple of wicked free kicks like that, and we've not really had not too many direct free kicks to score from, I don't think, since Robbie Blake left. So if we can get a few more from Robbie Brady like that, that'd be fantastic. So no pressure there, Robbie.
It was very measured free kick as well. I remember thinking at the time that he took absolutely ages to take it, and he was really eyeing it up, and you could just tell that he absolutely thought about every single bit of it. And if we've got a footballer who's got that ability to do that, but is also a very intelligent footballer, I just don't know when we got to the stage. It seems to have bitten us very quickly. But how are we suddenly signing £15 million midfielders who can do that? It's amazing. I'm loving it.
Heather says, well, my husband, who has no interest or knowledge in football at all, did say, as soon as the player got fouled, he said, you're going to score here. I was like, that's not going to happen at all. And we did, so, yeah.
It's a shame it wasn't a
Saturday.
He could have given you the lottery numbers as well. Yeah, it was a fantastic free kick, and I was going to go back, I'd say, to the Robbie Blake era to look for the last time we sort of had that quality of free kick. I think for me what was so great about it was, you know, the position in the top corner, obviously the fact that Courtois is a giant of a man, so it is quite difficult to beat him up high. But while he got close, he wasn't quite there. He could have only been an extra couple of inches tall. It does feel quite wrong to bring up the next thing on the back of just talking about how great his free kick was. But I thought, apart from the free kick, that Robbie Brady actually had a really quiet game. Obviously, he came into the game in difficult circumstances, having not really settled at the club yet, and against the team who were undoubtedly going to win the league, in my opinion. What did you think about his performance, Natalie, away from the free kick?
He did all right. I mean, part of me refuses to pay an awful lot of attention to how he performs, number one, against the Chelsea side, but number two, against his first start for the club. He's been playing Championship football. It's a massive step up, and he's in a new side playing a new system with new teammates. So I'm not entirely sure of the appropriateness to assess his start at the moment, to be honest. If he's five games in and he's still quite quiet, then I think then that's probably the right time to be having a chat and say, well, is he too quiet? What does he need to do? I think we'd be being super harsh, to be honest, and a little bit overly critical if we start picking apart his performance in the second game. And he's only played, for what, 20 minutes against Watford before then. So, and he's also playing against the Chelsea side who didn't really let us settle in the opening stages. So I'm not too concerned, James, to be honest. I can see why you would bring it up as a discussion point, but I don't think this is the right time for us to start analysing that. I think we need to give him a little bit more of a bedding in period, to be honest.
I think Brady did say himself after the match that he thought he'd had a, I think he joked by saying, you know, it's a good job,
yeah,
I got waiting because I had quite a poor game. And I think I can't think of anything he did wrong. Similarly, nothing jumps to mind of anything that he did that was outstanding and that he did particularly well. There's no kind of forward moves I can think, but I think, you know, Brady was fantastic in that. I think even the likes of, I think George Boyd was involved in a few more meaningful forward moves that jump out. But I certainly wouldn't say he had a poor game. I think he had a solid, if unspectacular, game other than the goal. And I just wonder if his comments after the game, and maybe it could affect his performance overall, is, you know, he did have that failed tackle for Chelsea's goal. And I just wonder if that 6 minutes into his home debut, his first start, if that just affects the confidence, the mentality a little bit. I don't know if that affected his performance.
Maybe he's getting defensive, isn't it? Just because he wants to impress everybody, and he's got a huge weight, he's got a huge pressure on his shoulders, Kevin. Don't you think? You know, he's coming as the new record signing after two have already been beaten. And if he's, I mean, I'm impressed with his ambition. If he's coming out and saying, "Look, I can do better, I can do better," everyone's like, "Okay, don't worry, it's your first proper game."
Yeah,
so maybe it's a good sign of ambition. But yeah, you're right. Maybe he's just trying to be a little bit defensive and a little bit nervous, really, and like the new guy and wanting to just, you know, lay his marker. I don't know.
I think the other thing to mention really here is that the best players have quiet games but still have a special moment, and they can do something special and change the game completely. And I think that's what you saw from Robbie Brady. He didn't really have an eventful game apart from that slide tackle and the free kick. So I'm not going to complain if he has a quiet game when he can pull something like that out of the bag.
Yeah, I think Dyche said after the game that it was a difficult game for both of the new signings to come into, and that, you know, they did really well in the circumstances, and I don't think you can argue with that, really. The other point I want to talk about in a more of a negative-ish light, I think, after the game, was Ashley Barnes. I thought, on one hand, he had a really good game. You know, he battled really hard. He wins a lot of balls, but I think what he does with the ball after he's won it is just a little bit disappointing. So many times you see him, he works hard, wins the ball, and he goes to flick it through for someone, and the pass just isn't quite there. And I think we saw that with the Andre Gray chance early in the second half. I mean, Adam, what do you think about, you know, Barnes' distribution, really, I think, with the ball?
Yeah, Ashley Barnes, it was just a very sloppy performance, really. Again, I noticed that Watford away, his execution on the ball wasn't very good at all. I mean, I like Ashley Barnes, and I think he brings something to the side even when he is doing like that. His aggression and sort of desire to sort of mix things up and get involved and get stuck in, it's a desirable attribute to the side. But Watford away, you saw it. I know you spoke about it last week, but you saw it, that chance towards the end, where he sort of fluffed his lines and it sort of cost us getting something from the game. And it's sort of a more positive attribute this week, that he didn't actually have a negative impact on the game. I just thought he wasn't as effective as he could be. I think if you're going to choose any player to be the weakest link in the team, I feel quite bad saying this because they all work hard and they all put effort in, and obviously that's great. But I think it would be Ashley Barnes if you had to choose someone. But that doesn't mean, as I said, it doesn't mean that he should lose his place. It just means I think he's the weakest of the lot that we have, and we just happen to have a very strong squad. I hope that his performances improve and sort of recapture his sort of best form for us. Let's look forward to seeing a better sort of Ashley Barnes that can execute properly on what he wants to do.
I'm not sure I 100% agree with you both with this one. Can I bring in the opposite side of the argument here? I actually thought he was really effective yesterday. I was really pleased with his performance, way better than it was against Watford. He's got a role to play in that side, and he plays that role very, very well. We've talked before, and I completely agree with the lack of technical flair that Ashley Barnes has. I never thought yesterday that he was going to provide us with a goal, does that? And that's a really weird thing to say, that you're pleased with the performance of a striker who you don't believe is going to score a goal. But he's been given the job of making a nuisance of himself, and he's been given a job by Dyche to try and be a more of an aerial threat and bring some balls down. And I found yesterday he won a lot of balls, and he laid them off really well to the central midfielders who were picking them up and trying to find balls out to Gray to run onto. So I think we're being maybe – I think – my view is that I think he played well yesterday. And so I just wanted to add that comment, because there will be some of our listeners who sit on both sides of this angle. There'll be some who think that he was awful and some thought he was good. I was pleased with him yesterday. I thought he did well.
Natalie, who would you say is the weakest link in the squad then?
Barnes. No, I don't disagree with that point, but I think you can also have two. I think you can have both. I don't think it's an and or. I think you can still say that if you were going to line them up as technical footballers, Ashley Barnes is the weakest technical footballer. And if we do have designs to become a solid, long-standing Premier League mid-table side who's maybe even in time pushing for Europe, then there isn't a place for Ashley Barnes, and in time he's going to have to be improved. The same with Boyd, the same with Arfield, some of those players, and to some respects maybe it's the same with Vokes as well, some of those players who are doing really well, but that's not to say you can't improve on them as the team improves. But I think, as much as I agree with that, that's not to say that the role he's playing now isn't needed and effective, because it's giving opposition defences something else to think about, and it's finding a different way of winning. And I think Barnes is doing that really effectively. At the moment, we don't have personnel to match some of the technically better teams in the division. So why don't we use the skills of the players that we've got and see if that works? I think that's what he's doing.
I think that second striker place alongside Gray is a bit of a dilemma for Dyche, and I think it is our weakest spot in the team. I think that Vokes and Barnes have probably both got equal amounts of positive contribution and weakness. I think they're the opposite sides as well. If you could combine them two into one player, it'd be really, really effective. But I think Barnes has got the aggressive side of his game, and I think he contributes a lot more to our wider play and our wider shape and our wider game.
Yeah, that's
But on the flip side, he's very rare that he directly contributes to a game-changing or goal-creating moments. On the flip side, I think Sam Vokes has been involved in many more goals and goal opportunities, both directly himself and also creating those for the likes of Gray or whoever. But I think when he's not doing that, he offers less to the overall shape of the team, and particularly with the Sean Dyche team play, where it is quite an aggressive style of football. It's very much chasing those balls and putting pressure on the defenders and creating, just trying to push the defenders about and put them on edge almost. And that's what Ashley Barnes gives you, which Sam Vokes doesn't. So I think it's a bit of a dilemma, because I think they are pretty much head and neck and neck on terms of which one of them deserves to be in the side and which one contributes most to the side. It's just a shame that their attributes are kind of polar opposites, I think, in a way, in the way that their game affects the team. And I think if you could combine Vokes's ability to be involved in those big moments with Barnes's aggression and his better kind of management of the game and our shape, you'd have a really fantastic Sean Dyche second striker. It's not something we've done at the moment, and I think that's something what we will probably be looking to address come the summer.
Yeah, I think just one final point I'd say on this before obviously James probably wraps us up and moves us on, is that we've talked in the past about learning our lessons and adapting to Premier League side and maybe being too honest for our own good. One of the factors, in my opinion, of Barnes playing very well yesterday was his ability to win us free kicks and to influence the pace of the game. I mean, there was a couple of moments in the last sort of 5 or 6 minutes of the game where we were on a counter attack and he was up on his own and he forced the defender into giving him the nudge in the back and going down. It kills the game. It gives us that time to then do a free kick, maybe getting it in the corner. And we've been really guilty in the past of being very lazy with the ball and very wasteful with the ball in the dying stages and conceding late goals. He was very effective yesterday in controlling the pace, controlling the dynamic and just winning us some free kicks and some set pieces and some time to just kill the game off. So that was, for me, I think is something I bring that up because we've talked about that in the podcast previously about us adapting to the style of Premier League and to manipulating it to get what we want. And I think Barnes did that very well yesterday.
I didn't quite expect a discussion about Barnes's game to go on for quite so long, but all good stuff, I think, all good stuff. Obviously, there's a few opportunities for Burnley to actually take all 3 points this weekend. Firstly, there's the opportunity that fell to Mark Lawton. He finds himself in a position I think he probably doesn't expect him to find himself in, one-on-one with Courtois, and he tries to put it between the legs, and Courtois makes an absolutely fantastic save, I think. I know after the game that Lawton thought maybe he should have done better with it and picked a different spot, but when you look at how Courtois fills his net, I think even if he goes near side, which is where I would have personally shot, I probably would have put it wide, but that's where I would have gone for. Courtois could still cover that. And if he goes to the far corner as well with those long legs, you don't know if he's going to cut it out. And then obviously the other chance was Andre Gray. I think for this, as we're talking about Ashley Barnes as maybe inconsistent distribution, I think the pass to him is a bit poor and he expects Lewis to cut it out. But it does come through to him, and in the end, he just finds a limp shot at Courtois, where maybe if the ball through was better and he has more time to think about it, he may have just slotted it away first time. What did each of you think about the two opportunities to sort of steal the game? We'll go to you first, Kevin.
I think the Lawton one, when your first time you watch that, when you watch it live, it looks like a huge opportunity. It looks like he really should have scored, and you end up being a little bit disappointed. But actually, the more you watch it, I think it's actually a lot more difficult than it initially looks. I've watched quite a few different angles, particularly there was one on Sky, an angle from pretty much directly behind Lawton, and you look actually at the angle that he's given by Courtois, the goalkeeper, and he comes out very, very, very cleverly, and he spreads himself. And you look at the angle he's got, and there's nowhere he can put it to the side because he's got his leg covering that. He's too tight on the right hand side, so he can't go there. The only two places he's got to go are over the leg on the left hand side, which is very difficult to pull off in that short space of time for anybody, let alone a defender, and also between his legs. For a player like Lawton, you would absolutely expect him to go between the legs and just hope he's going to get enough pace on the ball. He didn't quite. Goalkeeper did very well to stop it, but I think, yeah, almost any player who gets in that position is going to do the same thing. Maybe if that comes to somebody like Andre Gray, or maybe like even like the likes of Joey Barton or Brady, they might scuff the chip of the leg, they might miss it, or it might go in. I think it's only a very kind of confident and attacking player who's even going to attempt that chip of the leg. Most players will have gone through between the legs, and that's so. Actually, I think it looks like a bigger miss than it was, I think. Also, can we just appreciate the fantastic pass through from Barton to get to Lawton, which was just talked about how good Barton was, but it was just a fantastic inch-perfect pass, and it was one of those just beautifully spotted and beautifully weighted passes.
Yeah, I agree totally with Kevin there, which he'll absolutely love. I think the thing for me is, how amazing is it that we play someone like Chelsea, who are so dominant this season, and we have chances to win the game, like actually plausible, credible chances. That's the takeaway, other than what Kevin said there. That's the takeaway for me.
Yeah, I think I agree with those comments. I can't find it in myself to criticise Lawton for not putting his pass away. At the end of the day, he's a right back, and he doesn't expect to find himself in that position very often. It was quite a surprise that the ball just fell for him, and he was, you know, one on one with the keeper. Does that fall for a striker, or sorry, if that falls for a striker or a midfielder, do they probably score it? Yeah, quite possibly. But technically, he's not thinking quick enough to put that ball in the back of the net as a defender. I think your gut instinct faced with the ball in front of a goal is to try and clear it. So I think it'd be very harsh to put any criticism Lawton's way for not doing better there. He's a right back at the end of the day. The Gray chance is slightly different in that obviously he again finds himself with a surprise ball. I don't think he expects the defensive error and it to come to him as cleanly as it did. A lot of people I've seen look at that goal and think that Gray should have taken a touch. I agreed at the time when I was watching it at the game. I thought that if he'd have taken a touch, he could have done better. Once I saw it at home on a replay, I don't think he can take a touch because I think their defence is already closing him down, and I think they're good enough that if he just takes one touch or tries to dead that ball at any point, they just take it off him. So I think he shot it at precisely the right time. It was just unfortunate he couldn't quite get enough on it. I have absolutely no problems with either one. It was great that we found, as Adam said, that we found ourselves with an opportunity to score. As we get better in this league and as we get more confident, we'll put those chances away. But, you know, it was fine.
Yeah, I think that does more or less do it for the Chelsea game. I don't think there's anything else that really jumps out that needs talking about. Moving on to a little new feature I'm going to squeeze in just here.
Here we go.
We've got a great player.
Oh, no, he's season, not. So.
This is Kitely Corner.
Oh my god.
Oh my god, that was great. Production value right there.
Boo.
So I'm quiet in the masses. Michael Kitely's been away on loan for 2 games now, and he scored a second goal. And I've watched it now. And wow. Robbie Brady step aside because there was a better free kick this weekend. As Kev said, all he needed to do was a ping off the bar. Kyle is in off the post. Sensational. Just inside the D. What a finish. What a finish. And also, honourable mention for another Burnley player out on loan. Chris Wood scored an absolute screamer for Bolton at the weekend. Very nearly ripped the nets clean off the goal. So good weekend all round for Burnley players away on loan.
And how is corner spelt in this feature? Is it with a K, like Kylie?
With a K, because alliteration is important.
Yeah, can I just say, Birdie, you better just like milk this, because when Jamie comes back next week, you're never getting that in the podcast next week. He's not letting this go any further than this episode.
And this is the end of the first and last ever rendition of Kylie Corner.
And actually, just to, while we're still on Kylie, I also read an interview with him from still last week after he scored against Wolves. I thought it was very, very good interview where he said that he could not celebrate against Wolves. So it shows that he's got a lot of heart as well. Great lad, Michael Cowell. Anyway, and over to the first of our normal regular features, we've got Natalie with Tweet of the Week.
Tweet of the Week, Tweet of the Week. Tweet of the Week, Tweet of the Week. Tweet of the Week, Tweet of the Week, Tweet of the Week.
Indeed we do. Indeed we do. Never mind this newfound Kylie Corner nonsense. Let's get back to the real feature on this podcast, the most favourite moment for all of our listeners and Tweet of the Week. This week, we are looking at a tweet from Ant Healed, who basically summarised where I think most of us had got to by the end of the game yesterday and the reaction across the board to Burnley's performance. Ant says, brilliant. Think that's the game where maybe for the first time I felt we're top flight team rather than plucky imposters. And I think we all agree with you there. Suddenly it feels like Burnley are going to be here to stay and we're not just a relegation fodder, going to be up and down for another season. So thank you for sending that in, Ant. That one this week's Tweet of the Week.
Well, the fan favourite there. We'll move on now from the Chelsea game and this weekend's football, I guess, in total, after that little bit of Cartley Corner. This weekend, we've got something a little bit different at the turf. Moving away from the league, we've got the FA Cup. Lincoln City coming to the turf. We did talk about this a little bit last week. Obviously, in Lincoln, the club, and Lincoln, the fans, disappointment at getting a 3,200 away allocation, and they, I believe, wanted about 7,000. Well, their attendance this weekend was about 5,500 at home, so clearly not quite as many fans as they believe would come to Burnley to watch them in the FA Cup. But also, I saw a tweet last week where a local newspaper down there said that there was hundreds queuing for tickets to the game, and there was about 12 people in the four. So I'm not sure they're as popular as was thought, but I'm sure they'll still have a great travelling support. Obviously, in previous rounds of the Cup, we've seen Burnley mix it up a little bit, and a few players who haven't been in the first team get the opportunity to play. How many changes do you think there'll be this weekend then, Kevin?
I think it'll be very similar to what we've done in previous rounds. There'll be a couple of changes here and there, but nothing too wholesale. I think we'll have Pope, that's Nick, not the, in goal. And Tarkowski will come in. Westwood, I believe, is not cup tied, but Brady is. So I think Westwood will certainly continue in the side so he can continue to adjust to Burnley's team and the Sean Dyche way of playing. Sam Vokes, I'm sure, will come in up top. Possibly Arfield come in for Brady. I'd like to see Goodmanson play if he's fit, but it looks like there's still a bit of a niggling injury or fitness problem with him, so I'm not sure about that. I'd certainly like him to play if he can do, because I think I'm still really looking forward to him getting back into the side and seeing Brady and Goodmanson play on out wide for the rest of the season. So, yeah, there'll be a couple of changes here and there, nothing wholesale, and we'll just get those players who are just on the edge of the first 11 coming, like the likes of Goodmanson and Vokes coming in and getting their bit of football and really showing Dyche what they can do and why they should be starting more games and playing more games. And obviously we'll have Pope in goal, who has done admirably in the Cup this season, getting a bit more experience under his cap for. I'm sure he's been identified as the future Burnley number one. I think he was speaking earlier in the season that he's, when he came to the club, he was told about the progression and path for him. And I think he's certainly been earmarked to come into the side when Tommy Heaton does eventually start to get a little bit too old and start to drop off. I think he's a very natural Tom Heaton replacement. So any more, the more football we can get him in the meantime, the better. So he'll come in. Other than that, it'll be a couple of those who are, like I say, just outside the first 11.
I love how you clarified that it was Nick Pope, not the Pope, as if the papal, the Vatican were on the, had sent a delegation to Turf Moor.
That's my favourite link ever.
It's a very important distinction to make. I just want to make sure. I don't want to be ever to be accused of misleading our listeners.
I think
we'll certainly be hoping that Nick Pope's performance isn't holy on Saturday.
Oh my God!
I think he'd deal very well with crosses.
Oh no!
Bring back Jamie.
We need to bring some order to this podcast. My goodness.
Yeah, no, I think there will be obviously a few changes to the side from the weekend. I'd expect to see Westwood and Barton still play. To try and bed in that as a partnership if we're going to have to cope with them for at least a few more weeks, I think, until Hendricks back or Defoe can recover from injury. Interestingly, though, I mean, at what point, Natalie, do you look to start playing the first team? Because obviously, if we get past Lincoln, we're in the quarterfinals, and getting in the business end of the competition, and obviously winning it potentially, really starts to come to the forefront of the mind.
Yeah, you're right. I'm so confused by what I would do with this. Actually, it's quite a nice problem to have, because in previous seasons we've never really had a second string squad to be able to rotate for cup games. So it's quite new and exciting, is all of this, being able to think about playing the second string team. I'm, from a purely selfish point of view, I would swap them now. In that I feel like we can't take any. We've got a really good opportunity. Don't get me wrong, I'm sure Lincoln will put up a very good fight. But on paper, it would look like we have got an opportunity to be in the quarterfinals of the FA Cup. So I would not risk anything in slipping up at this stage. I would take that opportunity that we've been given. I would play a stronger team as possible and make sure we're in the last eight. So I would start playing them now. And I think the reason that I feel that is that as a fan, purely as a completely selfish point of view, I want to win the cup. And I don't want us to get to the stage where we get to Wembley and we've got one game, a cup final, to be able to pick up a piece of silverware, and one that Burnley hasn't won for a significant number of years. And we miss that opportunity because we're too loyal to players who might not necessarily be able to perform on the day. It sounds awful and it sounds harsh, but ultimately, sport's a competitive game, and that is the nature of any sport, in that you pick your best players. And I don't necessarily think that there is a massive argument for loyalty there. I believe Dyche will. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see him play the same team right the way up to the final. That's the kind of manager that he is. I would love to see him be completely ruthless and just really go for it and play the best team he can to lift that trophy. Whether he will or not, I don't know, but I just really want to win this trophy. Can you imagine, as fans this season, Burnley staying up and us winning the FA Cup? I don't think I'd know what to do with myself. I'd be impossible. But yeah, I'd change it from now.
The thought of winning the FA Cup is fantastic, but at the same time, I'm not sure I want to bankroll a trip to Wembley. So it'd be a nice problem to have.
Two trips to Wembley. Yeah, you're going to go twice.
I know, that is ridiculous. A little aside, but it is still ridiculous that the semi-finals played at Wembley. I think it's really interesting to consider when we go back to the normal side. This weekend, I've got a feeling we still will play a few people who are missing out. I think, Tarkovsky will get a chance. Maybe Flanagan, maybe Dariqua. I think I'd expect to see Goodmanson. And obviously, you'd probably expect to see Vaux as well. And I think Nick Pope will play. But something that you see the big sides sometimes doing these cup runs is eventually start bringing more of the regular first team in, but maybe stick with the goalkeeper. So I think Nick Pope's not done anything in the cup run so far that means he doesn't deserve a crack at keep going. And obviously, maybe Tom Heaton would benefit from a little bit of rest. So maybe it could be the case when we go back to the first team playing that, that Nick Pope could still get his opportunity. What do you think about that, Adam?
Yeah, I think that's a good shout, really. I'm just trying to think, did Tom Heaton play at Wembley at some point? Did he not play in a cup final or something like that?
Yes, he played for, was it Cardiff?
Cardiff, I think it was. I'm on Wikipedia right now. And he was, like, something tells me he was the second choice at that point.
Sense.
But I'm not totally sure. But anyway, so it would, I don't think Tom Heaton would have anything to complain about if that's the case. I could just be totally making that up, but I'm not sure.
So yeah, it says he played at Wembley for Cardiff in the League Cup, and he saved a couple of penalties, I think. So.
Oh yeah, as cover for David Marshall. There we go. So there you have it. Maybe that's what all Burnley goalkeepers need to have done, is played at Wembley in a cup final as second choice goalkeeper before they become great. I think that's stretching the analogy, but that's
you can take it even further for Tom Heaton, actually, because he was in the travelling party to Moscow when Manchester United won the Champions League. Didn't make the bench, but he was there.
Oh, okay. Has Nick Pope been to Moscow?
Don't think so. Or the Champions League final.
He might have had a holiday there.
he could have been as a fan, I guess. Okay, so talking about the weekend's game, it's probably time to do some predictions. Kev's fledgling feature.
Nope.
Obviously, he's a little bit disappointed this week.
I don't think we should talk about predictions this week. I think we should just
It's been a very
long podcast, and I think we don't want to our listeners will be on their commute. We may be reaching work now. We might be in an evening, and you know, it's been a long tired day. We don't want to keep the podcast going too long, so I think we should just skip on to the end now, and we don't need to talk about predictions.
Unfortunately, Kieran, I think we can spare 5 minutes. Obviously, myself and Brommers did predict a 2-1 win, which didn't quite come off.
It was so close.
Obviously, we were so close to a 2-1 win, but it didn't quite come off. So we'll go over to you now, Kevin, to just take us through the results from this week.
Predictions.
Boom. Well, it's been a shocking couple of weeks. I think I cursed us a couple of weeks ago by saying that in the first five games between us, we'd only got two completely wrong predictions. Since then, there have been 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 wrong predictions within two games. I think I've cursed us all in that respect. I think I had my excuse in for Watford that Hendricks' red card nullified it, but we've got no excuse this time. So, yes, myself, Natalie and James all scored nil pois this week. Natalie and James, as you said, both predicted wins 2-1. I predicted 2-1, but before we round, I just thought Chelsea would be too strong for us. But as if it couldn't get any worse, Mr. Smith picked up his first correct score of the season, his first 3 points. He correctly predicted a 1-1 draw. So, it's going from bad to worse. But on the flip side, if we look at the table, I've still got a comfortable lead. I'm up at the top with 13 points. James is well behind on 9 points. Jamie creeping up behind James on 7. But Natalie still well behind on 4 points. And Natalie now, with Jamie's success this week, Natalie is now the only one of us not to have predicted a correct score yet. So
great. Thanks for
myself,
that.
Myself, James and Jamie have all got 5 results right. I've got 4 scores. James has got 2 scores. Jamie's got 1. Natalie's got 4 results and no scores. So yeah, the pressure's building.
I'm gonna start a petition to make sure we can reverse this idea that the loser gets a forfeit, because I'm not loving my position at the bottom of the table right now.
Oh, well, obviously, a chance straight away to remedy it, promise. So we'll let you go first on your prediction for this weekend's fixture. How do you think we'll do?
I am going to stick with my strategy that has been working so well for me this season, rather than say I've got a a bad feeling, but I've got a really good feeling about this because it's a home game. I am going to be sticking with my new swanky new turnstile, which is bringing us loads of luck and doing us really well at Turf Moor. I think we will be far too strong for Lincoln, and I'm going to predict a 3-0 win.
It's a good start. I'll definitely take 3-0 right away. Kevin, how do you see it going?
I think I'm not going to be as ambitious as that. I think we'll have a comfortable scoreline. I think we're going to win 2-0. I'm going to go into a prediction here. I think it's going to be a tight, tense game for much of the game. It's going to be quite scrappy. And I think it'll be kind of hanging in the balance until we get maybe, you know, that 70th, 80th minute, quite close to the end, we'll get a breakthrough. And I think once we get that goal, Lincoln's heads will probably drop a little bit knowing our home record. We'll raise up and get a second, and it's going to be a 2-0 win. And the goals are going to be on 72 minutes and, what should we say, 86 minutes. There we go.
You're not getting bonus points for timings, Kev.
I was about to say, it may not be my feature, Kevin. It may be your feature, but I'm going to step in there and say there's definitely no bonus points available for.
Because if we do score two goals on those exact minutes, I want some kind of reward, because that is spectacular.
I will give you £20 of my own money.
That's recorded. That is now going out, being broadcast to hundreds of thousands of people. So. You can't get out of that now. I might write to Sean Dyche just to let him know when to get his team to score.
You're probably better off writing to Joey Barton, to be fair.
Oh, I'll do that then as well.
Well, Adam, you may not be part of the prediction league, but since you've been on the podcast, we'll take a prediction from you as well.
Well, the beauty of me being on the podcast is that I can, not being part of the predictions league, is that I can say whatever I want. And I think it's going to be an 8-3 win to Burnley.
Gone big.
I love it.
I'm big. Well, I did like Brom's prediction of 3-0, but I'm going to go one better, and I think we're going to absolutely fund Lincoln 4-0. Going to shatter their FA Cup dreams, and 3,200 Lincoln fans are going to be going home crying at the end of the day.
Canal?
Marshall True. Anyway, we've had Jamie Smith record his prediction separately, and Adam, by the magic of editing, is going to patch that in just here.
Hello, I'm Jamie Smith, and welcome to my predictions. Sorry, force of habit there. Lincoln, obviously, all respect to Lincoln, but should be fairly comfortable this for Burnley. I expect us to play a strongish team, probably 7 or 8 changes, similar to the last round, and really Burnley should get through without too many problems. So I'm going to say Burnley 3, Lincoln 0.
Anyway, that's about all we've got time for this week. Next week, Jamie should be back as normal, unless obviously he's angered the whole of Twitter again, in which case maybe he'll decide to take another week out of the limelight. Obviously, as usual, plenty of people to thank. Firstly, thank you to Kev, Natalie and Adam for joining me tonight. Thanks to Rick for the artwork, which is fantastic, as always. And thanks to Adam as well. 2 thanks this week for producing. And that's been everything. So this has been the No Name Never podcast. I've been James Bird. Goodbye.
That was such a heartfelt thank you at the end there. Is anyone else, you appreciate his efforts so much, you couldn't remember even though he'd been speaking a couple of seconds earlier.
Anyway, we've had Jamie Smith record his prediction separately, and Adam, by the magic of editing, is going to patch that in just here.
Hi, I'm Jamie Smith.
That's about
Adam, if you kind of put on Jamie Smith's voice and just predict a really ridiculous scoreline, and then we can just, if you say like 14-0 or something, then it gives Brommers a bit of a foot up in the league, in predictions league, because she needs it. She needs it.
I can't actually do a very good Jamie Smith impression, that's the problem.
And we can't have our listeners sending me in forfeits. Okay. It's going to be horrendous, so you've got to get me some points.
I think that George Boyd and Ashley Barnes would be absolutely disgraceful, and Lincoln are going to win 12-0.
Brilliant.
Jamie, I thought it wasn't available.
Well, Birdie, that was he's obviously down the bottom of the well.
he got so much abuse for his tweet on his tweet this week. Is I just jumped down a well to just to protect, just to hide away.
Wow, Jamie Carey,
I didn't think you were that funny. That's really good.